This podcast is not intended to be a substitute for medical advice, diagnosis, or treatment. Seek the assistance of your healthcare provider for medical conditions. The views and opinions of podcast guests do not necessarily reflect the views, policies, or positions of the Clifton Health Department or City of Clifton.
Welcome to Clifton Health On Air. I'm your host, Danielle.
And I'm your co-host, Lauren.
And we are a local health department podcast here in Clifton, New Jersey, that also services the township of Little Falls.
We are located 12 miles west of New York City.
And we are so excited that you tuned in today. We are launching a new series called, drumroll please, Health Waves, Voices in Healthcare. This series will take place with some few special guests that all focus on healthcare. And we sit down with really important individuals focusing on such as healthcare access, first aid basics, and much, much more. So please tune in to our series.
Here is part four. Genetic testing.
And today we are very excited. We have a special guest, Jessica Russo, master's in genetic counseling and a certified genetic counselor from the Hackensack Meridian Health, John Thoreau Cancer Center, Hennessy Institute for Cancer Prevention and Applied Molecular Medicine.
Jessica is a licensed and certified genetic counselor with specialized experience in oncology genetics. She was instrumental in developing innovative genetic counseling models in leading cancer genetics clinics and also worked in a cancer genetic testing laboratory specializing in liquid biopsy. Jessica has co-authored several publications in cancer genetics.
Welcome to our podcast. We're so happy to have you. How are you?
I'm so glad to be here. Thanks for having me. I'm doing well this morning.
And for moving forward, we're going to go with the Hennessy Institute at Hackensack Meridian Health, if that's okay.
Yep, it's a mouthful. No worries.
Awesome. Let's just talk about how did you get into genetic counseling? What's your role and responsibilities? And then what are your research interests? I know it's a lot. We'll start with one.
Yeah, no worries. So really what got me into the field of genetic counseling was in undergrad, I was a biology major. I, you know, really was interested in genetics, and I was also interested in, you know, that patient interaction. So didn't know that genetic counseling was a thing until I was able to shadow a genetic counselor at Columbia. Wow. Who worked in neurology. Cool. And I thought it was so amazing, especially because you're speaking to people at such a, it's a vulnerable time in their lives, and it's a privilege to be able to be part of that kind of part of their lives. But also you're really translating this complicated genetics to the average population. Mm-hmm. So it's really needed. It's a, genetics is just kind of grown so much, and the genetic counselors have really kind of taken it upon themselves to be able to be that translator for the average person to be able to understand all of this complicated stuff.
At your undergrad or at your observation, did you have any research interests, or what did you want to go into?
Yeah, so I mean, well, in undergrad, I wasn't really thinking about research so much, but okay. More so after graduation of the master's program and me getting more comfortable within the oncology space because so I did my undergrad at Penn State, then I went to grad school at Arcadia, who had a genetic counseling program. So I lived in Philadelphia for like the past 10 years, and I ended up going for 4 years. Doing clinical oncology, genetic counseling. I did a stint at a laboratory, that did more like therapeutic genetic testing. And then I was at South Jersey. Then I made my way up here to Hackensack to help start this new program. So, that's how I ended up here. But along the way, you know, the research interests kind of went along with, oncology. And I was fortunate enough to work with a lot of people that, really recognize the need for genetic testing and really wanted to make the genetic testing more accessible because, you know, there's only a few genetic counselors out there, although it is a growing field. There needs to be kind of a bridge to be able to have people have access to this genetic testing. You know, now when I'm at Hennessy, I, you know, work on a lot of different things because it's, you know, we're fortunate to be able to have access to lots of different laboratories, lots of different technology, but mostly focusing on getting all this amazing technology to the people that need it.
Yeah.
So we're looking at, you know, some pretty innovative stuff. We're working with a company that does, believe it or not, dog sniffing for cancer detection. So basically all you do is like you breathe into a mask and the it goes off to one of the, this laboratory that we're working with, and the dog will sniff the mask and see if you have cancer. And honestly, the data that's been coming out of it is so promising. So we're really, really excited to be working with them. We're going to be starting a trial with them soon. But just like one of the things.
There's so many great things to come about. Mm-hmm. The Hennessy Institute. I was wondering if you can just kind of tell us its story. How did it come about?
Yeah. So, I mean, it's a really great, it's a great institute that started back. Well, we opened our doors in July. So we were actually
July
only like
2024.
July 25. Wow. So we are very, very,
very
new.
Young.
Yeah. Okay. So it all started with the Mike and Patty Hennessy Foundation. So the children of Mike and Patty Hennessy, you know, gifted us this donation to be able to do what we do in honor of their late mother, Patty Hennessy, who unfortunately was diagnosed with breast and ovarian cancer.
Oh, man.
And she actually did not know that she was a mutation carrier for something called a BRCA, I believe it was BRCA1. Until unfortunately it was too late and she had passed away from her cancer. Now, you know, they have a lot of resources, but, you know, even having a lot of resources, they were not able to know this information ahead of time. And they recognize that the average population probably doesn't have access to this, right? Mm-hmm. So with, you know, that spirit in mind, they wanted to develop the Hennessy Institute to be able to lower those barriers so that more people can have access to genetic testing, more people can have access to just like knowing their cancer risk in general, right, so that they're aware. And also kind of bridging the gap to these like amazing new technologies that are coming out for cancer detection as well.
I was also curious, with mentioning the importance of getting tested, especially if there is some sort of family background, the opposite side of that, if there is cancer detected, but they don't have a family history, what does that mean in terms of genetics? And is there a way to test still for that?
Yeah. So, I mean, well, the thing is there are guidelines that come with that really kind of guide us on like who should be tested regarding like who will be covered by insurance, right? And typically those guidelines go off of personal history of cancer. So they'll have like a personal history of like say it's a young cancer, typically like a young breast cancer under 50, or a personal history of pancreatic cancer, ovarian, or if there's a strong family history of cancer.
Okay.
So like if you had a, you know, mother or father with cancer, specific types of cancers, you might meet this criteria, right? Now, of course, at the Hennessy Institute, we do things a little differently because we want everyone to be able to access this. So you don't necessarily have to meet that criteria, right? So you don't have to have a family history of cancer to be able to have this genetic testing. If we find a mutation and you have no family history of cancer, there could be a lot of different reasons why. It could be that maybe, you know, these mutations are associated with different cancer risks for different people and we're not seeing it. Also, just honestly, a lot of people, especially in the older generation, were just not as forthcoming with their cancer. So, you know, could be grandma had a lumpectomy because she had breast cancer, but she never went on to tell you that, right?
Yeah, I've also had a family member that I still to this day don't know what kind of cancer he had because he just didn't want to share, didn't feel comfortable sharing. But yeah, it's a personal matter, and I think everyone goes through it their own way. But this is great, and
great information. I think it's awesome that the Hennessy Institute is kind of building that bridge to different populations. I think that's interesting and really amazing.
So you said that they don't have to meet that certain criteria of being under or over the age of 50 and having that family history. So what age can people start getting tested? What's the youngest?
So, I mean, technically you can get tested at any age, but the things that we test for at Hennessy are more adult onset conditions, okay. Right? So when you start getting in the realm of like things that are not going to affect you until later on in life, we don't want to start testing kids because then there's that problem with autonomy. We don't know when things will manifest. We don't know if the child actually wants that information. So typically we say, after 18, maybe, in their early 20s. But there are certain things that we test for that do affect that we do see in childhood. So it kind of depends.
Okay. So if a parent is getting tested and they unfortunately have a specific mutation, mm-hmm. Would you recommend or refer their child to be tested?
Yeah.
How would that work?
It totally depends on what we test for, okay. Or what the person tests positive for. So like, I was talking with about Patty Hennessy being positive for that BRCA1 mutation. Mm-hmm. That's all adult onset cancers. So if somebody tests positive for a BRCA1 mutation, we wouldn't recommend testing their kids until they're in their 20s. Right. Because also screening wouldn't start even until their 20s anyway. So it wouldn't really make a difference. Yeah.
Okay. Right. I was curious also, what does this genetic testing look like typically? Because maybe for people that are listening, they think it might be very invasive or not. So could you give us an idea of what it might look like if they go in and ask for genetic testing?
Yeah, no, that's a great question. So really, genetic testing can look like a lot of different things, but it's typically not invasive. How we do it at Hennessy, because we do everything remotely, is we do a saliva sample. So we send you a little kit in the mail, you spit into a tube, and we're able to get all this information just directly from your saliva.
Wow.
You can, of course, you could do it through blood. Sometimes, very, very, like, rarely, you have to get, like, a piece of skin if you have like a blood cancer. Mm. But most of the time, I would say like 99% of the time, it's either blood or saliva.
Okay.
And last question on that. So is it just a general scale test to where it picks up everything, or is it again looking at family history or maybe different symptoms that you're honing in on? Let's search for breast cancer genetic markers or different types of cancers. How does that work?
So we've kind of like gotten to this point in genetic testing where there's so many options, especially in oncology. So really you can go one way or the other. Typically we don't just test for one gene now. We test in these things called panels, right? So we're looking at several genes all at once. Again, like just one saliva sample, one blood sample, we can look at all that. At Hennessy, we actually look at 76, 80 genes, depending on what we're using. And each one of those genes is associated with different cancer risks, right? Now, you can also say there's like just a family history of breast cancer and you don't want to know all that information. You can just look at genes that all have, breast cancer risk in common. That would be like a breast cancer panel, right? But it would be like 20 genes, and each one of those genes still has other cancer risks associated with it as well.
Okay.
So really just, it kind of depends.
Hmm. Interesting.
Sorry, I'm just learning so much. Forever. I'm learning so much, and I am hoping the residents and the community members are learning as well. And is there some stigma around genetic testing? Is there some challenges that you're facing at the Hennessy Institute?
So, not specifically within our institute, but I think with genetic testing in general, there's always a stigma. Of course, with the privacy, be careful where you're doing your genetic testing, because if it's done typically through like a clinic that has seen genetic testing before and knows what they're doing, then they're going to be using labs that are appropriate, follow HIPAA, follow, the regulatory laws. But on top of that, there of course is still discrimination with genetic testing. Mm-hmm. Now what that discrimination looks like is really focusing on insurances. So there is a law that protects you from being discriminated against by your health insurance. You typically, don't have to worry about your health insurance, learning mm-hmm. about your genetic testing results and then dropping you for that. There are some caveats to that law. The law itself is called the Genetic Information Non-Discrimination Act, or the GINA law. It was put in place in 2008. Now, the caveats to the health insurance or anybody that has like is an active military, and anybody with insurance that is like a Native American state insurance. And there's a few other ones as well, but typically you wouldn't have to worry about any discrimination there. And also those groups, maybe not the military, do tend to have their own protections in place. Employment, GINA also protects you from discrimination from employers. If they learn that you're mutation positive, they can't hire or fire you. Also, you know, there are some caveats to that as well. If you work for like an employer that is a small employer that only mm-hmm. has a couple employees, then technically they don't fall under the GINA law. But I think the biggest one, which still kind of affects people's decisions today, is the impact that it could potentially have for life insurance or disability or long-term care, pretty much anything outside of health insurance. That GINA law doesn't cover it, right? So a lot of younger people that come to us, they're not thinking about going out and getting a life insurance policy. Right. But we say maybe, you know, talk about getting a life insurance policy before, you know, looking at genetic testing. See if it's, you know, something that is right for you. Because unfortunately, you know, at least in the state of New Jersey and the state of Pennsylvania, we don't have any protections in place. Some other states do, like I believe Florida does, but not so much here right now.
Oh, wow. Thank you for that. Yeah, thank you for that information.
Mm-hmm. Let's take a step back. So really what we're looking at right here with genetics is we are looking at these genes that everyone has, right? And these genes are, when we're talking about oncology genetics, they are supposed to be protecting you from developing cancer, right?
Okay.
And I always tell my patients, it's essentially what genetic testing is we are spell checking these genes to see if they're all spelled correctly, because that's truly what it is. And if we find a spelling error or a mutation, it tells us that gene's not working properly, that you are at a higher risk of developing certain cancers compared to the average person, because you don't have that extra protection there. So if we know what genes are affected ahead of time, then we can say, okay, this individual is at a higher risk for example, breast cancer, right? Mm-hmm. Where if we know it ahead of time, we can start doing screening at a younger age. Like, for example, with the BRCA genes, we start in their 20s. We would do breast MRIs, you know, mammograms starting at an earlier age. And then ultimately, you know, sometimes the risk is so high that we just say, okay, you might want to go ahead and go do a prophylactic mastectomy or removal of the breast tissue before a cancer happens, right? And same thing with the, you know, ovarian cancer risk with BRCA. You know, there's another set of genes that are associated with something called Lynch syndrome, which is more focused on colorectal cancer, uterine cancer, where we say, you know, do colonoscopies at a younger age. So it really just depends. So really, I think the benefit there is knowing that there is this cancer risk, right? And that there's a lot of times there's something we can do about it, whether it be prevent cancer altogether or catch it at the earliest possible time.
Wow. And do a lot of providers refer to genetic counselors, or how would a resident be aware of how to get a genetic counselor?
Yeah, that's a great question. So like I spoke earlier that there's not a lot of us out there. And,
right.
But, you know, in a place like New Jersey, where we're so densely populated, we are fortunate to have a lot of, like, medical centers in the area, there are a good amount of genetic counselors. Okay. So there, you know, sometimes there are physicians that work in partnership with genetic counselors. Sometimes physicians are, or PAs or NPs are comfortable enough to order the testing themselves.
Okay.
You know, and then maybe if there is something that's found, refer out to a genetic counselor for, you know, specific discussions. And if anybody is interested in speaking to a genetic counselor, even like outside of oncology, because there are a lot of specialties, there's neurology, there's, you know, prenatal, if you know, you're thinking of having a baby and you want to know your genetics, you go on to basically just Google Find a Genetic Counselor, and there's a findageneticcounselor.com part of our National Society of Genetic Counselors.
2025.
Yeah, exactly.
2025. Of course.
So yeah. You can look it up through there.
There's an app for that.
Yeah, right.
I got that. All right. No, that's, and it is interesting because I'm just thinking, you just touched upon maternal health. And so, being, you know, pregnant, things like that. It's, I feel like that is the only area that I heard about genetic testing, me specifically. Specifically with oncology and the Hennessy Institute, what services are offered?
Yeah, so really all in the spirit of kind of lowering the barriers to genetic testing, we have partnered up with a company called Cancer IQ. that allows us to be able to administer this cancer risk assessment. And anybody can, you know, just Google Hennessy Institute. It'll be like the, either the first or second, you know, thing that pops up. And it's a small risk assessment, probably around, takes like 5-10 minutes. And ask you questions about your personal and family history to see if you are considered high risk. Do you have a family history of, you know, cancer, and you qualify for, you know, specific cancer screening right off the bat. And then from there, we actually proactively reach out to you. So we have three nurse navigators that work with us that are all experienced in genetics that will reach out to you, discuss what was, you know, given to you in the as a result from the cancer risk assessment, and then offer you the genetic testing. So from there, we send you a kit if it's something you want to do. We send you the kit in the mail, you spit into the tube, and then everyone who results out will discuss those results with me. The person never has to come in. Unless something's found and they have to get some specific screening, there's no reason for them to come in. We offer telehealth. We do everything over the phone. If something's found, then we will enroll you in our high-risk clinic. We work with our medical director, who has an extensive amount of experience in cancer genetics, but we also have a lot of physician partners that you know, do the screening that we would recommend as well.
So I was also curious, you mentioned that it's online. Is it free for everyone?
Everything's free except for the genetic testing, which I wish I could say was free, but the testing itself typically is covered by insurance or is $250 out of pocket, or we have a lot of financial assistance options at Hennessy, thankfully. So really the financial assistance, pretty much if $250 is not something that you can pay at this point, then we will be able to help you. So either some of the labs that we work with, you would meet their financial assistance criteria, or you would meet our financial assistance criteria, and we'd be able to sponsor the testing for you.
Is there a specific form a person, if they're interested, would have to fill out if they aren't covered by insurance or if they want that financial assistance?
Yeah, so there are specific forms. Like I said, we work with a lot of different laboratories, so it kind of just depends on the person's individual. Like if they have no family history of cancer, we might have to go on a different route, but ultimately, we try to get them to a point where they're comfortable and, you know, they're not paying. Thankfully, testing in general, like I said, is now only $250, which seems like a lot. But, you know, 10 years ago, it was like $5,000. So it's getting lowered. But right now, that's kind of where it is.
That's great. I was also curious, as far as the Cancer IQ online testing, is it available in different languages?
Yeah. So we offer it in Spanish as well. And I believe it's in Brazilian Portuguese. But we are working on getting other languages.
Awesome. And so also the follow-up is available in Spanish and Portuguese, or would that be strictly English?
So our nurse navigators, when they call the patient, they can use translators. Yeah.
That's great.
So we, you know, we use, Hackensack has a great, you know, telephone translator department. So I use them myself for my, like, meetings with patients as well.
Yeah, I always ask the question because, you know, Clifton being one of the most linguistically diverse cities in the nation, we always have to make sure that we're accurately representing our listeners and asking the questions they have maybe in their heads as they're listening.
Absolutely. And even so, when a person is taking this risk assessment, will it prompt them to schedule an appointment, or will the nurse navigator or the system say, oh, someone's going to contact you? How would that process work?
So the last question that we have right now on our risk assessment asks if the person wants follow-up, right? So if they indicate yes, then our nurse navigator will reach out to them.
Okay.
Regardless, you know, of their high-risk status, whatever it is. So we reach out to every single person who indicates that they want to be reached out to. If somebody says they don't want to be reached out to, we still follow up with them through email just in case.
Okay.
So yeah, either way, we're still going to be following up.
Perfect. Also, I was curious, are there any upcoming community events? Because I know that though everything is very accessible online, some people like to have that face-to-face conversation or just, you know, ask questions, maybe access these services in paper form. I don't know if that's a thing that you guys do.
Yeah, no, absolutely. You know, I think kind of doing this for a year now, it's really opened our eyes to all the different populations that are out there and the different needs to be more accessible in different ways, right? We have an online questionnaire, but of course there are certain populations that are not able to access that, or might just not understand what it is. So we do a lot of just in-person outreach opportunities. I know, Danielle, we did one together.
Yes, that's how we met.
Yeah, exactly. and we recently we did the Passaic County Women's Health Fair yeah. event, which was good as well. We travel all over the place too because we're remote. We try to get access to everyone from all over New Jersey, okay. Pennsylvania, New York. We're licensed in all three states. And recently we went down to South Jersey to a group, and that was really enlightening because they don't have smartphones. The specific population that we were talking to, they use flip phones, right? So we have right. QR codes all over our exactly. everything. Yes. And they were like, how am I supposed to access this? So we actually brought iPads with us so that okay. they could that's do it great. Right there and then.
No, that's awesome.
But yeah, so just like meeting all these different populations, you know, made us pivot in terms of like marketing strategies or yeah. just like awareness strategies. Yeah.
No, absolutely. Yeah. And I know you touched upon it, but we did a presentation in Little Falls. I know you had an amazing time, as in the residents had a lot of questions, and it was great to see you there. And then you did a presentation at our May Memorial Library in Clifton. It was able to be recorded, so it can reach a lot of people in Clifton and a different population for sure. Mm-hmm.
I reach out to the faith-based community mm-hmm. here in Clifton and also Little Falls, but it's been kind of difficult. So having different, you know, topics would be interesting just to like spread the word. I think right. that's one of the main things. That's the whole point of this podcast, but yeah. also specifically of these important preventative measures. So maybe we can brainstorm something.
Yeah. Well, it's actually, you know, one thing that I didn't mention specifically with the Jewish community is that there are certain mutations that we find at a higher rate in the Jewish community. So that's why it's actually super important for that community to be more aware of genetic testing and cancer risk. For example, I'm going back to BRCA because yeah. we know so much about it. Mm-hmm. BRCA1 and BRCA2 are two genes that actually, you know, the general population rate of having a mutation is probably like one in 500, give or take. But having a having Ashkenazi Jewish background actually makes you at a 1 in 40 risk of having a mutation, right? You know, there's other genes that are on our panels that also are associated with a higher rate of mutations in the Ashkenazi Jewish population. So, actually, you know, within the guidelines, sometimes just having Ashkenazi Jewish background will make, you know, insurance actually cover your genetic testing.
Oh, wow. Right? Interesting.
So, that's, you know, something to bring up with that community as well.
Definitely.
Yeah, that would be a good approach to building relationships with that community. Mm-hmm. How would you approach building a relationship to kind of male populations who don't want to get screened for colon cancer or prostate cancer specifically?
Yeah, hey, I mean, oh gosh, men, it's not funny, but it's just like every time I go to a new place, we look at the patient population, it's like 75% women, because women just naturally, you know, want to know more, you know, about cancer prevention. And also, to be fair, a lot of the past knowledge that we know about cancer genetics has been targeted towards women.
BRCA is breast cancer, but men can have breast cancer, right?
Right. And there are men out there that absolutely want to know their risk. But, you know, I think there's a lot of, there's a lot of misinformation when it comes to cancer genetics, because like we just said, BRCA, quote unquote, the breast cancer gene, also associated with prostate cancer, also associated with pancreatic cancer, also associated with melanoma, right? Mm-hmm. So those are three things that men have, right? Like skin, you know, prostates and pancreas. And then also, this misconception that really this genetics can only be inherited from mom's side, right? Mm. So, and men maybe not knowing that whatever they carry can also be passed down to either their sons or daughters. So there's a lot of things that I feel like just in the past we haven't focused on, you know, awareness wise or information wise when it comes to men. Also, there's a lot more money in the past that has been thrown to breast cancer research and prostate cancer research, right, than some other types of things. So, you know, I think really that kind of that causes this kind of bottleneck with men. But men in general, they're, you know, they come in, they're like, I'm doing everything I'm supposed to be doing. I don't need to know this information. But once you actually sit down and you talk to them and we kind of dispel these misconceptions, then they're a little bit more open to it. And they realize that it's not only about them. You know, if they have a mutation and they have a daughter, it's important for them to know that they're positive so that their daughter can get testing or whatever it is. Mm-hmm.
Right. Absolutely.
I think going along with that, too, since we were talking about men and populations that might not be so inclined to, you know, go and get tested, are there any, I really like the unfortunate statistic that you shared about the Ashkenazi Jewish population and their higher risk for these mutations. Are there any other populations that are at higher risk for different gene mutations or specific cancers that they, you know, should be on the lookout for?
That's a good question. And as far as genetics themselves, I mean, there are some like what we call founder mutations in different populations. I don't know if they have as much of an effect or prevalence as the Ashkenazi Jewish population. However, like diet plays a big role. Mm, yeah. Like, you know, where people come from play a big role. So like, for example, those of like Asian ancestry, you know, living in Asia, they actually have a higher rate of stomach cancers, right? So it really kind of just depends, you know, I don't know off the top of my head other, but also there's, you know, the unfortunate truth that certain populations don't have as good access to healthcare, right? So in general, the Hispanic population in the U.S. is going to have a little bit of a higher risk of certain, you know, maybe cancers or, you know, when the cancer is a little bit more aggressive, right? So not so much maybe like diet or anything like that, but, you know, just kind of access to healthcare, which affects certain populations in the U.S.
Yeah, and we have an actually access to healthcare committee within our Steps to a Healthier Clifton coalition. And so we look at, and that was actually in our 2025 community health assessment here in Clifton, that healthcare access was something that a lot of residents had questions about, unfortunately experienced lack of healthcare access, even in this community of Clifton, where we do have a lot of providers here in the city. But it was just, you know, there's barriers to accessing really quality healthcare. And so I was wondering how or what would you recommend for families out there where they have barriers specific to transportation? You have the virtual option, but is there any other ways to break those barriers to healthcare access for that specific population? I know that's a loaded question.
I was going to say, I wish I had like a magic potion to fix that, but it's like a pervasive issue, unfortunately, that not only affects this area. And I think there's a lot of different factors, you know, with this area as well. But, you know, things that we try to minimize at Hennessy, one, we discussed, you know, the remote option, but also even people that don't have health insurance for whatever reason, we're able to most of the time cover their genetic testing. And also, I think a lot of the educational aspects that we do, like the outreach that we do, the lectures, we do webinars on like why do genetic testing, like what we do here. I think, you know, once people understand things a little bit better, then they're going to be a little bit more proactive. So, you know, again, I wish I had a magic potion to fix everything, but that's like the approach that we're doing right now. Yeah.
And those lectures and webinars, are they available to everyone?
That is a great question. I think we did recently a webinar through Hackensack, who our medical director talked about the importance of genetic testing in colon cancer. We also did a podcast, me and him, through Hackensack that talked about breast cancer and the rise of young breast cancer in women. And that has been recorded. It's out there at HealthU as well. So there are little, you know, things that we've been doing. But most of the time, it's really just getting to these communities that are not going to be following up with their doctor on a regular basis and doing like a little lecture, like right there at their church or whatever it is, you know?
Yeah.
So you would partner with a faith-based community. And you would go in and you lecture like you did with us at the Civic Center.
Hello, exactly. Danielle. Yeah. Okay. Yeah. Like, there's so many opportunities. It's just like once people know that you're like open to, you know, doing this, then, you know, people invite you. And it's been a really great, like I said, we've been meeting all these people from different communities.
I think that's one of the most important things, because I think a lot of times we can, you know, go off and understand, you know, the prevalence after the point, after someone's gotten cancer or after, you know, they're hit with a disease or hit someone that they know. But prevention is key and information is key. So, stay educated, folks. Listen to these podcasts. Check out the websites.
Yeah.
And know more. Be curious, because it can save lives.
Absolutely. Crystal said it best, and that's what we hope to have this goal of this episode. I did have a question for those in school and looking at different, you said you're a bio major. I feel like a lot of people are bio majors, which is great, but if they did have questions related to how to get into the field of genetic testing, do you have some advice for students or residents who wanted to pursue this as a career?
No, that's a great question, because like I feel like I definitely didn't know about it until I was fortunate enough to be able to experience it, you know, on my own. I mean, I would say that the biggest thing is just, you know, going, looking up. You could even find that find the genetic counselor tool. You can actually look at genetic counselors, and they say who is open to student outreach.
Okay.
So if you're a student, and I get emails all the time from students that are interested. Thankfully, you know, it's so nice when a student's interested in wanting to do genetic counseling. I would say that is the number one resource. Also, if there's a genetics center near you, reaching out to the genetic counselors. I would say genetic counselors are very unique in that they absolutely love to teach. They absolutely love to spread the word about genetic counseling and genetic testing. So most genetic counselors are also very busy, so give them some time to respond. But, you know, most of us will, you know, reach back out and offer you even just like a phone call to discuss, go over everything.
Oh, that's awesome.
And I think we can finish off by asking, just, are there any other resources that you wanted to share specific to the Hennessy Institute?
Yeah. So as far as resources, I mean, I think really our institute in general is a great resource. Just like I said, if you look up the Hennessy Institute, we have a website where you can actually find all of the information that we've been discussing. When we come out with new tests, we're going to hopefully, you know, put that on there as well. I think we kind of, you know, we discussed the podcasts that are available, the webinar, and we will have more webinars available in the future that are going to be focusing on wellness, you know, like mindfulness and nutrition, because that is also a big part of prevention and, you know, cancer risk as well. Yeah.
Awesome. Mm-hmm. So if you want any more information regarding the Hennessy Institute and Jessica Russo's team, we'll make sure to put all the links and website and podcast that she was talking about in the bio and the description. And we thank you so much, Jessica, for being on this podcast. And the invitation's open. You're more than welcome to come back. And hopefully we can dive into a little bit more about the world of genetic testing.
Yeah, thanks for this opportunity.
Yeah, of course. It's a pleasure.
It's a pleasure having you. Thank you so much. Lauren, take us out.
Don't forget to tune into our podcast every other week for a new episode. You may visit our website at www.cliftonnj.org. Follow us on social media. We are on Facebook and Instagram. Our handle is Clifton Health. If you have any questions, you can email us at health@cliftonnj.org. And before we leave today, let us ask ourselves, did you make a difference in someone's life today?